And now you've crossed the line into the midday. Welcome, I'm Norman.
I'm Stephanie, and with us also is Rachel Barton Pine, a virtuoso violinist, a composer, a philanthropist, an educator, a musical detective.
A heavy metal artist.
That's right. And a few other accolades. At 17, she was the winner, the youngest person and the first American to win the gold medal in the J.S. Bach competition. She has recorded, I think you're up to 16 CDs now, with more in the hopper, more to come.
Yeah, three more in the can and other projects in the planning stages.
And enjoys playing heavy metal and thrash metal as well as classical. Well, I enjoyed watching you on your YouTube channel.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah, welcome, Rachel Barton Pine. Thanks for coming.
It's great to be back.
You're here to perform with the Lake Geneva Symphony Orchestra tomorrow night.
Yes, this is going to be a very special concert. You know, of course, I've had the great pleasure of playing with some of the top orchestras here in Wisconsin, Milwaukee Symphony, the Madison Chamber Orchestra, and, you know, wonderful professional groups. But the Lake Geneva Symphony is an all-volunteer ensemble, and it's such a heartwarming story. They started just 10 years ago with only 9 players, and they've grown to be an ensemble of more than 60 musicians. A new young music director who just joined as their new conductor, David Anderson, who also leads the Elgin Youth Symphonies. And it's just so wonderful to play with people who are playing for the love of music and just so enthusiastic and dedicated. And, this is the first time they've ever brought in a national soloist and had a corporate sponsor and all of those things. So they're really trying to take it to the next level. And I'm so excited to be a part of that.
They're off and running now. So, and what did you say you're performing with them?
Well, I'll be playing the Bruck Concerto in G minor, one of the most beloved in the violin repertoire, of course, piece that I've been playing since I was 8, but, you know, just never get tired of hearing it again and again because it's so rewarding. But there's actually a really cool coincidence about Saturday night's concert, which was totally unplanned, but it turns out that on November 13th, exactly 125 years ago, Maud Powell made her big U.S. debut playing the Bruck G Minor Concerto with the New York Philharmonic. And so, you know, as someone who's been a longtime fan of Maud Powell and the inspiration that she's been to my life, I'm just so thrilled about this coincidence and about the opportunity to tell people all about her during our pre-concert talk before the symphony concert.
You did what I guess you could call a tribute album to Maud Powell about 3 or 4 years ago now.
Yeah, a lot of works arranged by her and works dedicated to her. She was really on the cutting edge of playing, well, she premiered the Dvorak, Sibelius, and Tchaikovsky concertos in the U.S. when they were challenging cutting-edge contemporary music back in the day.
Sorry.
And worked, knew all these guys. So
she was an American female violinist at a time where that was kind of a segregated situation, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, American artists, even by American audiences, weren't taken as seriously, and women artists were very much discounted, and she broke all of those barriers and became actually the most renowned woman violinist in the world and the most acclaimed American violinist of either gender during her lifetime. And really, not only her work advocating for the violin, but really transforming classical music in America, going out and playing the first ever classical concert in places that had never had one before. And
frontier towns and things like that.
Sounds like the kind of thing you're doing with some of your tours. I'm not talking about Lake Geneva, mind you.
Maybe the bar in Kenosha tonight.
Well, that's right. And I always have Maud in the back of my mind, you know, her work, promoting the music of composers of African descent, women composers, giving advice to kids. You know, she would probably have been blogging and emailing. All of the things that she was doing are so equivalent to that. It's really quite amazing. And, yeah, that's right. So tonight I'm going to actually be at the Bratstop in Kenosha with my metal band. We go on after 10, and we'll be handing out symphony flyers and hoping we can get some of our fellow metalheads to... we won't be doing any crossover. I mean, tonight it's a straight-up electrified metal show. Yeah, we'll see if any adventurous, brave classical listeners decide to come give it a try.
Do your classically trained ears have to wear special equipment when you play heavy metal?
Well, actually, all of us in the band wear earplugs, which a friend of mine
in the
Milwaukee...
Too, shouldn't they?
I would definitely advise it. Uh-huh. Well, a friend of mine in the Milwaukee Symphony said, isn't that like deliberately putting too much salt in your soup and then having to cut it with some extra water when you serve it?
Uh-huh.
But the thing is, the rock drums, even unamplified, are just so darn loud that to balance the instruments, you have to crank up the amps on the guitars and bass and violin and vocals, and then the collective effect is just too loud. So, hence the earplugs. But then you get all those vibrations going on.
Your bones resonate sympathetically.
It's just a different thing. But definitely, you know, if that's the kind of music that you enjoy, I really have always believed that classical is also something that speaks very powerfully to those same really deep emotions. And so it seems to me like a very natural step for somebody who enjoys rock music to come over and check out the symphony show. So hoping we can encourage a few people to do that when we see them tonight, and maybe see them again the next night at the Lake Geneva concert.
You just tell them to remember to take the earplugs out when they go to the
Lake
Geneva. Get the full experience. Well, speaking of Maude Powell, this is her arrangement, is it, of the Dvorak Humoresque?
Yes, exactly. I have to tell you a very funny anecdote. I played a tribute recital to her at the National Museum of Women in the Arts in Washington, D.C., including this work. And Leonard Slatkin, after the concert, came backstage and said hi. And, you know, he said, you know, these transcriptions are so fantastic. Maude Powell really was the female Fritz Kreisler. And unfortunately, I didn't think quickly enough on my feet, because I should have responded,
Fritz Kreisler.
Exactly, because, in fact, you know, we all know his arrangement of Dvorak Humoresque and so forth, but, you know, she came first, and she was a role model to Kreisler and all of his generation, so it's really amazing. She was the Victor Talking Machine Company's first instrumental recording star. So, you know, they were always trying to convince her to do popular tunes because those records would sell. And she said, popular music is familiar music. And if I record these beautiful classical pieces, they'll become familiar, and hence they will be popular. And indeed, she was right. And, of course, this Dvorak Humoresque was one of her early records and popular recordings.
And who's your pianist for this?
My primary collaborator, Matthew Hagel.
Thank you.
So what did Maud Powell do that was different with that humoresque of Dvorak? I mean, of course, originally it was a piano piece. Was she one of the first to make it a violin piece?
Yes, she was, and she kept it in the original key of E-flat major, which is not exactly a violinistic key, but has such a wonderful, intimate, warm flavor that, you know, technical difficulties be darned. And, of course, she kept, you know, retained a lot of the double stops and so on as well. You can actually hear her own recording of it. There's a wonderful four-volume series remastered on the Naxos label of all of these, like, very early 1900s recordings of Maud. And, of course, she could never record things like the Sibelius Concerto, which she was so associated with.
Long. Because,
yeah, she didn't live into the electric era, which is really unfortunate, but you can really hear her artistry even in these short pieces, just the electricity and the integrity with which she played. Really a special artist.
Now, you're also performing, have been for a while, I gather, as part of an ensemble, too.
Yeah, my Baroque violin side of my personality, Trio Settecento. We've been together since 1997, and our most recent album is called A German Bouquet, Bach and His Contemporaries and Predecessors. So that's a really fun stuff spanning from, I guess, more than a century worth of music, and really showing how German Baroque music encompassed so many different styles. There was French-inspired repertoire, Italian-inspired repertoire, things that were very obviously polyphonically Germanic, even some things inspired by the English divisions style. So, you know, that's why we call it a bouquet, both to suggest the type of venue in which these pieces often got heard, which was, you know, sort of the private living quarters, mm-hmm. as opposed to the bigger types of occasions. So a more intimate type of music making, chamber music focused, but also the fact that you have all of these different flavors coming together.
Now, are you playing a violin from that era?
Yeah, ironically, my Baroque violin is younger than my modern violin. Because for, you know, all of my symphony concerts and so on, I have the great honor of playing the 1742 Guarneri del Gesu, known as the Ex-Soldat. Of course, same year and maker as Paganini's instrument, and personally selected by Brahms for one of his protégés, who in fact played chamber music with Brahms, which means my violin got to jam with Brahms.
Wow.
That's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, and of course, playing something like the Bruch G minor concerto on it, which was written for Joachim, Brahms's collaborator. I mean, this instrument was just made to play those great romantic concertos, even though, of course, it sounds beautiful in any repertoire. But when I want to play, you know, with harpsichord and viola da gamba and have the gut strings going on, I actually have a 1770 Nicola Galliano instrument, which has never been modernized. In other words, it's never had the, you know, the 19th century type of neck and bass bar and soundpost and all of the re-outfittings that most of these violins underwent. So it's in its original condition, has almost all of its original varnish, which is just absolutely pristine and beautiful. So really lucky to have that violin as well.
So actually, I mean, recording in a way has done a big service for Baroque music, because you don't have to play to a huge hall, you know, with a violin that's designed to have a relatively small voice. In other words, the recording, you can recreate that original Baroque sound more easily.
Yeah, and all of the subtleties that the gut strings have, which the powerhouse setup of something like my Guarneri del Gesù. You know, you gain something and you lose something. And, you know, to have the microphones right there picking up on all of that detail that's so special about.
There's a certain directness and a certain warmth to that sound, those strings that's just,
absolutely. They're very alive.
Mm-hmm.
And you tell us that this composer we're about to sample, Pisandel, was actually an inspiration for Bach.
Yes. Well, he was the greatest violinist in Germany at the time. He was somebody that Vivaldi admired and wrote a lot of repertoire for, and his own playing, you know, was all over the fingerboard, you know, much earlier than we think of people doing those things yet. But he also was amazing at being able to play multiple voiced works on the little four-string violin, and it's really pretty clear from the evidence that his 1717 unaccompanied sonata, which I recorded on a previous album, was if not the sole inspiration, it was definitely an impetus for Bach in composing his unaccompanied six sonatas and partitas. And it's thought that, other than Bach himself, that Pisandel was probably the only other violinist during Bach's lifetime to take up those works. So, very interesting relationship there. But what I recorded on Trio Settecento's A German Bouquet CD is one of Pisandel's sonatas for violin and continuo, which is very much in the Vivaldi model. In fact, the first movement of this sonata almost sounds like it could have been a concerto. Very unusual for a sonata.
And other members of this trio are Jean-Marc Rosendahl, who's playing here viola da gamba in this piece.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And then the harpsichordist is David Schrader, with our guest today, Rachel Barton Pine, violin.
Thank you.
has a pleasant personality, doesn't it?
Just puts a smile on your face.
Yeah, it's, in a way, it's just so Baroque, and yet it always has these little touches of individuality and inspiration.
It's interesting also to listen to the contrast between the violin we heard earlier and this violin. It's really a marked contrast.
Absolutely. The bow makes a big difference. Sometimes when I'm playing a mixed recital program and I don't want to lug two fiddles and swap back and forth between them, I will switch what stick I'm holding. And, you know, if I'm playing, let's say, an unaccompanied Bach sonata followed by some Beethoven and Brahms or whatever, I'll use a Baroque bow with my modernized Del Gesu, and that gets you, you know, more than three-quarters of the way there in terms of tone colors and articulations. But, of course, having the real Baroque instrument is such a luxury and so much fun.
You're committed to a lot of outreach and education, and you're going to be holding a master class tomorrow that's free and open to the public. What kinds of things will you be talking about tomorrow morning?
Well, actually, it is free and open to the public. It's at Delavan Darien High School from 11 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. That's in Delavan, Wisconsin. And I'll be coaching a few talented young people from the area who will play for me. And, you know, the challenge for the artist giving a masterclass, I think, is always to say something that's specific to that young person, whether it's interpretative or technical advice, but to say it in a general enough way that everyone in attendance can also gain something from it. So you would say, well, in this spot of this piece, you should do this, but that's because in this kind of spot, in this kind of repertoire, this should be done because such and such.
You know? Generalize
so,
it, sure.
Yeah, so try to make sure that everybody in attendance is really learning something. And then, of course, I always leave some time at the end for Q&A if any, you know, players from the community, or kids, parents, teachers, anybody has anything they want to find out about practice tips or what it's like to be a professional musician or whatever's on their mind. That's always a really nice chance.
We had a fascinating exercise during the summer. Wisconsin Public Radio hosted or co-hosted with the Wisconsin Youth Symphony Orchestra's this kind of booth down on the Capitol Square, at which we had, it was a what they call, you know, petting zoo for instruments.
Wonderful.
And one of which was a violin, and it was really fascinating to see the difference among these children. We're talking about, I don't think any of them were older than maybe 8, some as young as 4 by the looks of them, and some of them could pick up that instrument for the first time and just seemed intuitively to know how to hold it and, you know, how to make sounds out of it. And it'd just be really interesting to work with a kind of baseline, you know, fresh, young, tabula rasa kind of student and see what you could do.
Yeah, well, my hat is always off to those who do teach the very little beginners, you know, how to physically set up a child's body on this complicated mechanism and, you know, how to play all the rhythm games. And, you know, that's actually never where my talents have lied. You know, I tend to coach, you know, more of the advanced artist students. But, you know, getting those kids up and running, that's such a special skill. And, you know, those are our most important teachers, are the teachers of the youngest.
Did you take to the violin like a fish in water when you were a youngster?
Well, actually, yeah, I just fell in love with it right away, and my parents were a little weirded out. They're like, don't you want to put that thing down and go ride your bike? So sort of the opposite of the pushy parents. They're like,
Why aren't you normal?
Yeah. Like, you know, stop practicing, dinner's getting cold. But yeah, so hopefully everybody will come out also to the pre-concert talk before tomorrow night's performance, which takes place at 6:30, which will be a wonderful chance to get to know all of the repertoire and the new music director of the Lake Geneva Symphony and hear about the life of Maude Powell and her connection to the Brooke Concerto. But it's going to be a fun program. There's a contemporary piece by composer Dana Wilson called Shortcut Home. The Elgar Nimrod from the Enigma Variations and the ever-popular Rimsky-Korsakov Capriccio Espanol, and then concluding with the Brooke that evening.
Action-packed.
Wonderful program. And tonight, metal music featuring the violin at the Bratstop in Kenosha. Tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock is your master class at the Delavan Darien High School. And then tomorrow evening is the concert preceded by the pre-concert talk. And that's at Elkhorn Area high school. The,
yes,
the
it is.
Pre-concert talk and the performance.
And post-concert reception.
Oh, that's right. Always have to have a good party to celebrate this kind of a milestone. It's the Lake Geneva Symphony Orchestra under the direction of David Anderson, featuring our guest today, Rachel Barton Pine. For information, you can check lakegenevaorchestra.org. You can buy tickets online there, or you can call 262-248-1198.
Great having you with us again. It's been 3 or 4 years, I think.
Yeah, well, it's always great to be here. Thanks so much for having me on.